Welcome to Amy and Anya's story. Amy has been very courageous to share with us her beautiful daughter Anya and her journey through grief with First Light, in a hope that bereaved parents can connect to her story and seek the support if they need it. My name is Georgia Howard and I'm the Clinical Services Director here in First Light. We are a trauma-informed organisation and offer free therapy in the sudden death of a child. If you or a loved one are struggling with the sudden death of a child and are seeking support, reach out on our website and send in a referral. We are here to help. This story contains discussion of the death of a child, details of which may you find upsetting. If you find this content upsetting and need support, reach out to First Light because we're here to help.
Okay, I've actually asked her to be with me today because I don't want to cry my whole way through this. Okay, so Anya's journey started a really long time ago. I'm married 6 years today, actually. It's our wedding anniversary. Thank you. So yeah, it's just kind of relevant. I think these things always are. So it was about a year after we got married, we started to try for a family. I wasn't anywhere near ready to start a family when I got married. But I remember a year later, I was like, yeah, I have always wanted a family. But I just wasn't sure when that right time was going to be. And, you know, like anyone, you don't think you're ever going to have issues with infertility. You think it's just going to be plain sailing. You think it's going to be easy. And I remember a year later, I started to think, okay, maybe, you know, not that I thought there was something wrong. You never think there's something wrong. But we started having some tests and we were diagnosed with unexplained infertility. So nothing's technically wrong, but they can't really tell us why we weren't getting pregnant. About 6 months after that, so 2 years into our journey, we decided to start IVF. So that was hard for me. I'm big into my health, my wellness, you know, so to all of a sudden be putting all these hormones into my body and so much like intervention, I guess, just felt very alien and very scary for me. But I was willing to do anything to have a family. Like if this meant, you know, myself and Adam were going to have a child, you know, I was willing to do anything. So again, you don't think anything's ever going to go wrong. You think you're going to be the one that it's going to work for and everything's going to be fine. And I started off and yeah, it was hard. It was grueling. I'm not going to say it wasn't because it was. I found it quite hard at times. And I remember the day having our transfer and I just presumed it was going to work. And it did. We got pregnant on our first transfer, which was incredible. And I actually remember coming home that day and just going like, I'm pregnant, like for the first time. And if it did or didn't work, for those 10 days, I technically was, and it was incredible. And yeah, we were. I remember the day we found out, it was just amazing. And I'm just bringing myself back to that moment because that was the start of Anya's journey, you know? And pregnancy was, I was very sick. I got hyperemesis, which is extreme sickness. Extreme sickness. And I'd already been through so much with trying to get pregnant. And, you know, like I said, it did work for first time, which doesn't for a lot of people. So I was very thankful to be in that position. But I was met with this, you know, I was really ill. But saying that, every scan, every kick, every moment was so special. I just couldn't believe how lucky we were. We didn't actually find out what we were having. Deep down, I really wanted a girl. I mean, I think most people kind of have a preference and they don't say. Some people don't, I'm sure, but I definitely did. Obviously, I would have been happy either way. But 6 months into my pregnancy, I started to get really sick. Separate from the sickness. I started to get headaches. Started to feel really unwell, my body started to swell, and I was diagnosed with really early preeclampsia. It was terrifying. I'll never forget it. I was at a scan on my own, it was COVID. And I'd gone to the scan on my own, and I remember the doctor going quiet. And I know people talk about these moments. when a doctor goes quiet, you know, I've often heard people describe it. And I just knew, there was something serious wrong. So she asked me, was my husband with me? And I said no, because I was told I couldn't bring him. And then she's like, there's something very serious, you know, wrong. And you're very sick too. This baby's going to have to come tomorrow. I was 23 weeks and 5 days. And I can still see her on the screen, you know. She was a really, really active little baby. And I remember the doctor telling me that day, she was really cute. Now I was like, I'm sure they say that to everybody, but she's like, no, we don't. And I remember like just thinking how cute she was and how perfect. Again, I still didn't know I was having a little girl. But anyway, they brought me into a room. Adam came, and then it just was terrifying. I just had intervention then between that time and then the next day. So I was in Drogheda. The care I got all throughout has been amazing. It was nothing got to do with the care that I received. So they immediately start preparing me to have this baby the next day, which was steroid injections, drips. I was then transferred to the Coombe by ambulance on my own, which was terrifying. I was on my own, I didn't know what was happening. I still have my sickness. I just remember, like, when I say sickness, I mean, like, I was vomiting. I was terrified. I knew it was so early to have this baby. Adam followed me, you know, in the car behind him. And I just think of COVID times, so it's just cruel to be on your own through all this. But anyway, when I got to the Coombe, they brought me upstairs, and I had the most beautiful midwife. I'll never forget her. She was gorgeous. And I was kept awake all night. They were monitoring me and Anya's heartbeat, because if her heart had stopped it or slowed down or she got distressed, they had a whole team ready and waiting, because she would have been born at any moment. You know, she was measuring small. My placenta had started to break down, which was causing the preeclampsia. My blood pressure was really, really high, and I was at risk of, you know, there was like a stroke or a seizure. So both of us were really sick. I remember they were asking us to pick names, because they were really encouraging us to pick names, and I knew why. In case she wouldn't be born alive. So we had two names picked, and we knew straight away. So Anya was named after my friend who passed away when we were 16. She was a friend of myself and Adam. She was one of my best friends, and it was always going to be Anya. I remember when we met, I feel like she had something got to do with me and Adam meeting, but I remember saying, look, if we ever figure out, she's going to be Anya, there's no questions. And he was like, and we're both A's, and you know, I love everything to be the same, so it worked out every way. But we had a little boy's name too. So that night was awful. I could just hear her heartbeat all night, and I just knew. It was just terrifying. It's meant to be like one of the happiest times in your life, and it was just so scary. Plus, I was having so much intervention. Anyway, we got through to the next morning. I had my second steroid injection for her lungs, which they were really needed to get me to that point. They didn't want her to be born that night. And of course, every hour counted. Anyway, I was brought into theatre. I had to have an emergency section, and I had to have classical, which means you're cut long ways. So I've a bigger scar than normal. It was quite scary in theatre. There's an awful lot of people there, a lot of people. Anya had a team, I had a team, there was other team there. They warned me that she probably wouldn't cry. She did. She let out a real big cry. And she was, because I remember when they said it's a girl, and I was just, I remember bringing my sister straight away. I don't know how I did that. Like, I'm very close to my sister. And I remember just screaming it was a girl. I just couldn't believe how lucky we got. I just couldn't believe how lucky we were. And anyway, her daddy held her. She was then given over to the doctors and put in her incubator. And he took her first family picture, the three of us. And she was breathing on her own. They had a ventilator waiting on her. They said no babies born at that gestation breathe on their own. Straight away, she started breathing on their own. They're like, we can't believe how strong she is. You know, we're crying and then being able to breathe on her own. Like, it was just amazing. It was, they were shocked. So she was brought upstairs, and I was brought into recovery. And that evening I went to visit her. She was tiny, but she was so perfect. She, sorry. It's her daddy's nose. My dark curly hair. Like, she had curls, like you could, I have very curly hair. It's probably curling under this light. But she had, like, you could see black curly hair. And her little dark eyebrows, even though she was so tiny. She had brown eyes, but she was really looked like her daddy. She had my hands. I just couldn't believe how, like, perfect and beautiful she was for. She wasn't even, I was just touching 24 weeks. You know, and she had this little cheeky smile. I remember she had this cheeky smile that after she passed, everyone remarked on. She just looked cheeky, you know. To us, she was perfect, you know. Still is. And she was amazing. The doctors actually couldn't believe how strong she was and well she was doing. Like, because obviously I was down every few hours. Like, I was trying to recover. I just had major surgery. They were trying to put me back into bed. I was getting back out. You're on the drum. Like, you don't. I know I get what my poor parents probably went through for years. I was like, oh, I get now. My heart was broke already. And, you know, I was trying to, you know, express for her, and I was trying to heal, but, you know, trying to recover, but I needed to be down with her all the time. And they couldn't get over how well she was doing. So we got through the 72-hour period. And on the fourth day, I bought some things for her. I hadn't bought anything. It took me so long to get pregnant that I couldn't believe that I was actually pregnant. And it's not life, because I'm a really organized person and I love buying stuff. So on the fourth day, I just kind of said, I bought her a little teddy and a blankie. I love things with names on, so I had her name on everything. And on the fifth day, I woke up. I knew there was something wrong. There was nothing wrong at that stage, but my body knew. My whole body was shaking, but there was nothing wrong physically that they could see. But I knew it was something else. I can't describe it now. It's like my whole body was just trembling. I rang the nurse, I rang the midwife, and I was like, there's something wrong. And then one of the nurses was like, I'll go up to Anya. It's like I wasn't able to go up for a few hours to her. It's like I knew. It's like something was telling me not to go. I went up and she was okay, and the nurses checked, she was okay. And it's funny, when my husband left that day, it was always emotional leaving, but that day it's like he couldn't leave. Yeah. It's like he knew as well. And at 9 o'clock that night, the midwife came in. She said, Dr. White wants to see you. That's who was looking after her. And I said, I know this is it. She said, no, it's not, because he always tells us if it is. She goes, it's not. I said, no. So this is the feeling I've had all day. I was like, I know this is her time. I remember the midwife saying, she goes, no, Anya's with her. Like, my friend Anya, she goes, I know she's with her, eh? She's mine. I said, I just know. And we went up, and they told us, due to complications, because of her preterm delivery, or, you know, at the time, you know, the gestation she was born, she developed complications that they couldn't do anything else for her. Yeah. And people talk about, you know, their ears ringing when something like that happens. And feeling really far away and just completely out of your body. But I really experienced it. Like, I couldn't hear it. I could actually hear that ringing. My husband wasn't with me. The doctor kept talking, but I could just see his eyes. I couldn't hear what he was saying. And I asked him to I just need Adam. And it's like he was there in 5 minutes, and we live quite far away. It's so weird, and you think time would pass really slow. It didn't. He just seemed to be there. And we sat up with her all night, and her vitals kept going up, so we kind of had this hope. Now I knew. Like, my husband was cheering her on all night, you know? Yeah. But I kind of knew my heart, she was already gone. And he did too, I know he did. And because they said she might go quite quickly, but she actually, she was still there the next day. So we got her christened and said a few prayers. And I went down. I don't know how I did this, but I actually got into bed for an hour. Sometimes I regret, not that I regret it, but then in other ways I don't, because I got up after an hour or so. I don't know how I did this either. I don't know. I got a shower, brushed my hair, put on fresh pajamas. I want to look nice for, you know.
Yeah.
We had to decide when it was our time to go. She was on life support. And I just don't know how you're meant to make that choice as a parent who's longed for this little baby. I was like, I just can't. Like, you can't make that decision, you know? And I think when people think, you know, oh, yourself and Adam have lost a baby, they don't see the bigger picture. When you've lost a child, you don't see the decisions you have to make, the impact that has for the rest of your life. The pain, the suffering, the torture of it. They just think your baby died or your child died. They don't see everything that you have to, stuff that people shouldn't endure in their whole life. So anyway, I don't know. There just came a time when I knew. I can't describe that.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's like she just told me she was ready. I went in and I don't know what came over me. I don't know. She must have been with me. I don't know. Something came over me that I just wanted it to be really calm and nice. And Adam was sitting beside me. There's a wife behind me. And, you know, because they were saying, like, she might gasp. Or didn't, and I was terrified. I was so scared. It was also the first time I got to hold her. So they wrapped her up. She had a little colour, little rainbow hat on. And they handed her to me. And she just passed really peacefully. And I held her so tight, and it was like, it was a really beautiful feeling as well. Because I was holding my little baby, you know, that I just couldn't believe, you know, that I was just holding her there. And it just actually, there was something about it that felt really nice. And I remember saying that to the midwife through all the devastation. I was like, there's something that's nice about it. But then they come over and checked, and they confirmed that she had passed away. They were really kind, and, you know, they were kind of taking pictures. I didn't realise they were taking pictures, but they're ones I cherish forever. And then, again, I don't know how it came over me. I don't know. I suppose just something takes over. Because these are moments, like, that you'll never, ever get back. You're not in your right mind. I don't know how I did it, but I'm so thankful I did. And the nurse said, I'll get her dressed and bring her out to you in a few minutes. And I said, no, I really want to do it myself.
Yeah.
Which I did again. Oh, and I was really calm. I was doing it for her. Yeah. And I wanted one memory where I was sitting with her doing this for her, you know. We had this special little bassinet for her. And she had this rainbow blanket that they put over her incubator when she got sick. So that had tucked her in. Probably not my usual colours, I think. Whatever she wanted, apparently, but I was like, okay, we're going with it. I tucked her in and Adam carried her out. And I remember walking down the corridor of the NICU. I could see us in third person. I was so detached from what had just happened. I can't describe it. I could see Adam carrying her with me, with my arm around her. I don't know. It's like I could see us from outside.
Like you were watching the scene inside your own body.
Yeah. And we left there for the last time. Then after that, we were brought back upstairs to the room that I was in. And straight away, you're asked, like, you know, do you want to bury her? Do you want to come in? Or where do you want to go? It's so overwhelming. And like you have this like pain like you've never, ever, ever felt before. So, yeah, I mean, in the whole thing, there was really beautiful moments. There was really special moments. It was a heartache I never want to go through again. But I'm so thankful and grateful for her. I just love her so much. And yeah, she was perfect. Yeah. There's my life before, Anya. There's my life now. I'm very, very different. It also had a huge impact on my family. You know, like when you're pregnant, like everyone's waiting on the baby. It's not just you. Your husband, your parents, grandparents. Like me and my sister are like twins. We're so close. She was so waiting on that baby, you know. Like, there's a lot of people that grieve when a baby dies. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I remember... just the support I got is like I can't say anything about the support that I got or lack of support. So when Anya passed the same day, Friends of the Coombe were the first people that stepped in. Fiona's a bereavement counsellor in the Coombe, and she's an angel. I get emotional when I think of these people because I'm so thankful for them. But she was amazing. The empathy, the care. I felt like Anya really mattered, and that we mattered. We were the only person to have ever lost a baby nearly the way they were, or a child. You know, the way they treated us. It wasn't just that it's another one, another death. Even the midwives, the doctors. I remember we had to meet Anya's doctor, who was like over, you know, her section. And he cried when he met us, and he put his arms around us, and he's like, Anya's just not another baby. You know, we really feel when a baby dies. And Fiona was incredible. She did things for us in that time that I never... Maybe 6 months later you think of them. She took Anya's hand and footprints. She did everything with her memory box. She had her set out perfect. She got us a beautiful room in the Coombe. Josette helped as well. Called the family room. Beautiful, beautiful room especially. And I remember all my family met her that day. You know, so but to have the memories there, this gorgeous room with the stained glass. And I remember it was sunny and the sun was shining in. And it was devastating. It was utter, like, so devastating, but so beautiful. To see her in everyone's arms. It made it, like, there was, like, a softness and, a beauty to it. Like, they're actually, like, real memories I can hold on to. Even though it was so, so sad. So straight away, Fiona organised that, helped me with things that I didn't think, you know, she needed to help me with. You know, she did, guiding us and helping us, and they couldn't have done enough. So that was the Friends of the Coombe, and they provided us with a coffin. Things you don't even think of. But even little details like the thing that it comes with is a bit plastic, so they got a lovely metal plaque to put on the front, and just to make it, they don't have to do that. Yeah. Everything was thought of. Like, even this little bassinet that I still have that she was in the whole time. And that's all just provided. You know, it's not even thought of, you know. They even got her a slightly bigger coffin because my family were putting so much stuff in with her. I was like, oh, just pop that underneath it.
You were taking them out and they
were putting them in. Yeah. So we got an extra big one to, or, you know. So things like that, and it was beautiful, a little white coffin, that I'm like forever grateful for. The fact that she did the hands and footprints, I wouldn't have been able to do that. No. That's invaluable. Felicon then as well would be a huge part of it. It's an Irish charity. And they provided a memory box. Again, hand and, you know, that was part of the hand and footprints. Like Fiona helped me do it. Her hair is in that box. Teddy's that touched her face is in that box. Beautiful big candle that was sent out on her anniversary with her name and date of birth. Like, really making you feel that your child is special. Not just another baby or child that's passed, you know. Because to you, like, the biggest thing is you just don't want your child to be forgotten. That's the most scary thing in all of this, is that, what if my child is forgotten, you know. And even getting, I got a text on her anniversary this year to say that, you know, Felicon, we're thinking of her. And that the candle was lighting in her name that day. And I'm like, that is so special.
Because yeah. She's remembered there as well.
But and to get the text, it's so personal. you know, I know, I'm sure there's other babies that died the same day, but the fact that, you know, you're thought of on that awful day. So that was, and also friends that could provide us with beautiful blankets, her baby grow, hats. I mean, there was an endless supply of people who knit them and give them to friends of the coup. Also a huge thing with friends of the coup was they gave us, because we got to take her home. So without all these people, like, I wouldn't have had what we had.
Yeah.
Taking her home, like, we start building her house the year after we got married. And it's one of the second hardest things that I've ever had to do in my life. But we're so proud of that house, like, literally blood, sweat and tears have gone into it. And to just get to take her home, I brought her around the whole house, showed her everything, and, you know, brought her home to her dogs. And but without friends of the coup, without Failcon, without all these things that we had, we wouldn't have been able, it wouldn't have been possible. The house was full that night, but only with people that, you know, really select friends and family. It's like she had chosen who was going to be there. And my cousin, who sang at our wedding, sang all our favourite songs. We stayed up till about 4 or 5 in the morning, singing to her, and sang happy birthday. Told her stories, you know. But without friends, like, without this cuddle cot, without any of these things that no parent should ever have to think about, I wouldn't have been able to do that. And I remember then, it was about 10 days later, like, I'm a talker, as you might tell. I have to talk about things over and over and over again to try to make it right in my head. And I felt I was going to explode with grief. And, like, I remember my husband's grieving just as much as I am. Differently, but grieving just as much as I am. My sister's grieving, my dad's grieving, my mom's grieving, everyone's grieving around me. And I felt like I was drowning. And I said to my husband, I was like, I need to talk to a counselor. I just need to talk to somebody. And he said, okay, why don't we talk to Mary? So Mary, I'm in the drama group. So she has, like, a counseling service in the town that I'm from. So I, you know, but she specifically picks a counselor for you and your needs. And I was like, look, I don't care who it is. I just need to talk to someone today. You know, that's how bad I was. And she said, look, leave it with me. I'll get back to you tomorrow. And she rang me back the next day and she said, I'm after finding a girl. George is her name. First Lights, the charity. She goes, I just think you need someone very specific. Because child loss and baby loss is, it's such a specific thing, you know. And what comes with that, like the NICU and the trauma, and, you know, it's so, so specific. So it made sense. And I remember our first phone call. I remember you ringing me. And I think we're on the phone for about 1 hour and 10 minutes. And straight away, we just clicked. And I was like, I just, even if it felt 2% better, it was something. And I just knew. I was like, oh my God, I'm so, it's like I was just guided to you. And I remember talking to Fiona, the bereavement counsellor from the coup. And she said, how did you, so she rang me a few weeks later and she goes, look, I'm just checking in. How are you getting on? You know, maybe it's time we arrange some counselling if you'd like to. I can help you with that if it's something. She goes, oh, I'm already with First Light. I've seen Georgia. Me and Georgia are like, yeah, we're friends now. And I'm seeing her this last 2 months. I can't remember what. And she goes, Amy, oh my God, why didn't you tell me you needed someone sooner? She goes, Georgia. And I said, yeah. She goes, it has to be my Georgia, because she said, you know, obviously it's an unusual name. And she goes, I'm going to check it out. She goes, that's the girl I was going to send you to. She goes, how did you find her? And I was like, well, I think she was sent to me. And she goes, that's fantastic. And, you know, I think we clicked straight away. But without First Light, like, I just, it's not that I wouldn't have got through the last year and a half. You have to survive. But I wouldn't have did the things I did, or I suppose got something out of Anya's death that I have to feel there's something. One thing I would say, within reason, I know not everyone's able to do this, but I remember walking out of the hospital on the second night after Anya died, because I was still attending the hospital. And I said, Adam, I want to make this year, because I wasn't allowed to try to get pregnant for another year because of my surgery, which was also devastating. But I was like, I'm going to make this year one of our best years. I know that sounds really odd, but I remember, I just remember my body was so fragile. And I said, no, we're going to travel this year. We're going to do things that we didn't think we'd be able to do, you know.
Yeah.
And we really did. We had an amazing year. I don't know. Everything we did was hard, but I want to live because she didn't get to.
Yeah.
I don't want to not live because she didn't get to, if that makes sense.
Yes.
And that was always our thing. Now, there's days that that's much easier than others. I'm not going to lie and pretend. It's all great. It's not. But without you, without First Light, and without Friends of the Coon, without Fail Con, like, everyone just stepped in straight away. I didn't have to go looking for anything. Like I said, like, I would have got through. I'd have no choice. You don't have a choice. But I'd rather, like, I'm a very different person now. And yes, like, I would want Anya back tomorrow. But I wouldn't want to go back to the person I was before.
Yeah.
And that's what I have to take out of this. But like I said, it's because I've been assisted in all this that's... And what I'd also... Yeah. What I mean is, because I was, like, 90, doing this and doing that and seeing a counsellor, you know, probably stuff people do a few months later. But I go, actually, you know what? No, I wouldn't change it because I was trying to survive. You feel like dying yourself. You'd actually rather not be here. You'd want it to be you, not your baby. But I'd also say, and a massive thing, and I'm speaking to people who've, you know, lost children, lost babies. You're forced to make decisions you don't want to even think about straight away. And what I will say is, whatever you make in that moment is the right thing. If you choose cremation, it's the right thing. If you choose a funeral, it's the right thing. If you choose not to have a funeral, that was the right thing to do. Don't second guess any decision you make, because you're going through one of the hardest things in life, I think. It's impossible. So don't let guilt come in and say, I should have done this, or panic yourself. Whatever you decided to do in that moment, I believe your child is guiding you to do the right thing.
Yeah.
So like that, if you have, you know, a place where you go, where you visit them, if you've buried them, or if their ashes are at home with you, that's the right thing. So I would say I'd go, okay, because I had a few wobbles after going, you know, should we have done cremation and, you know, had her in the house? And no, we chose to bury her up beside Anya, actually. And whatever way you need to be, that's okay. Have boundaries. If you're in a situation you don't want to be in, walk away. People will get over it, and if they don't, well, whatever. Don't put yourself in positions, because I remember at the start, because I was so fragile, sometimes I'd be in a position going, oh, I don't want to be here. Actually take yourself out of that so quick. I think one of the hardest things I've experienced is people treat me really different. Looking at me as if they've seen a ghost crossing the street, or trying to fix me, is the worst. Like, I can't be fixed. I don't want to be fixed. Like, people try and rush in and tell you how to feel, and, you know, it was meant to be that they died. And like, you're walking around like with this huge open wound of grief and pain, and you're out and about, and people sometimes think when you're out and about, like, I'm a very smiley, happy person normally, and they go, oh yeah, Amy's doing great now, I'll just tell her, you know, that it was, you know, there's a reason in this, and there's no reason why my baby should have died, you know, there's no reason. So what I'm saying is, try not to go too off track, just say, I'm sorry for your loss, I heard about your little girl, and ask people about their child. You're not going to upset them. They're already upset. You can't actually upset me any more than I am. You know what I mean? And, you know, so I'd always say, don't cross the street. Don't treat us any different. It's hard enough. You feel so lonely and isolated that when people ignore you and people treat you different, it's really hard. It makes it worse. If they walk away going, Angie, you know, oh, it's been a great day and it's lovely, and you know they're doing everything to avoid asking about your child. All you want to do is talk about them. I remember meeting another mammy. She said, can we meet up sometime? Can we just talk about our kids? I was like, yeah. She goes, that's all I want to do. So I think everyone wants to talk about their new baby. Everyone's, and if they're past or living, it doesn't matter. So I would say, you know, ask them. And if they have a little cry, that's not you upsetting them. That's just them remembering their baby or their child, you know. So I would say, yeah, don't ignore people. Don't cross the street. Don't give advice. Unless you've been through it yourself, maybe. Don't try and fix the person or try and put them back together, because you're never going to be able to put them back together. You know, I don't want to be fixed. Because if I was fixed, that means I'd be over losing Anya, and I'm never going to be. So, you know, and then people put in with, oh, but they're only trying. Look, I know most people are good people, but that doesn't mean that it hurts so much. Yeah, yeah. So I think, like, I'd be a very social person, very outgoing person, and then for people to literally cross the street or ignore you, or you're in the shop and people literally, you know, go to the next aisle, it's horrible feeling. Don't do that. And if you're really uncomfortable, just say hi. How you doing? You don't even have to ask, you know, about on just how are you. Sometimes is enough.
If you are a loved one, are struggling with the sudden death of a child and are seeking support, reach out on our website and send us in a referral. We are here to help.